Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver and Al Warren.
Los Angeles. 102.3 FM Riverside.
And 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. Of course, I'm Al Warren. Now, make room. We've got the Martino kid is back.
I have returned.
Wow. It's been like a couple of weeks. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, well, I took some time off.
You're not allowed to do that. I haven't even had time off yet this year. How come you have time off? What's going on?
I know.
Royalty.
It's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, what were you doing with your time off? I saw another one of those kung fu reels or whatever.
Oh,
you
were
showing someone how you're beating up an old man?
Oh, that's my dad.
Oh.
that's back from 2010. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we used to train together.
You beat up your dad?
Yeah, for fun.
Why?
Not profit, but, you know, it'd be good if it was fun and profit.
Yeah, you need to make money off. I make money off of beating the old man. Can you imagine?
Oh, I'm getting them back.
Getting them back for all the extra pokes and bangs and stuff like that, you know? Now, do you guys wear underwear in those uniforms?
Yes.
Well, I guess you have to. Yeah. You're jumping around, right? You don't want to get any slapping.
Yeah, you need a home, yeah.
You know, kid,
I wasn't sure how far I wanted to go with that.
You got to keep it under control.
Yes. Right?
So, anyway, so Tina Turner passed, which is, you know, we talked about that. That's just sad, you know, but I guess, I guess she'd been ill for a little while, but it's always hard when you see a tough person kick it. And Tommy Chong turned 85.
85,
and I celebrate him because he listens to the show and he sends messages all the time.
That's great.
But we wish him well, too. He's been fighting with colon cancer, so, you know, the treatment, stuff like that. And, of course, Cardi B, my girl.
Yes.
Cardi B making comments on me. Woo! I feel...
Really?
Yeah, WAP, I'm a wet-ass pussy. I don't. It's like, wow. I hope she doesn't go back to that show when we played that. We played the theme of that song throughout the whole show subtly in the background.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. That was Brian Turnoff. And we were talking about, I forget what it was about, but it was really hilarious because we had that. Oh, because she won Woman of the Year.
Oh,
I was surprised that you have a song called that and you win Woman of the Year. Like, things have changed.
Big time.
Anyway. Now, speaking of Woman of the Year, we have an author. And and he's got a new book out. And it's for Rattling Good Yarns Press. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the new book is called Goes On Without the World's Understanding. So, Mr. Thomas Westerfield, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, Thomas, how did you get in the position of writing this book? Like, what led you to decide, I'm going to write a book and about this subject?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the Saints and Sinners Festival, a literary festival in New Orleans. Longer than a couple of years ago, but about 2016, I wrote my first short story after a 29-year lag. I hadn't written anything like that for 29 years, but I wrote a short story. It placed as a finalist. And they published the story, and that just started me writing again. And in 2018, the Literary Festival is a great festival, primarily for LGBT writers. And they offer opportunities to meet publishers to pitch book ideas. And I had a collection over the years of stories that I'd written, even some stories that I'd written 50 years ago. Had collected, and then I had started writing some more after I wrote this first story that placed as a finalist. That story is called Mr. Sissy in Sin City, and that's included in Goes On Without the World's Understanding. So that particular publisher was not interested in my idea, but it fired for me the idea of writing the book, and I wanted to write stories. It's the old thing. I wanted to write stories that I wanted to read.
50 years ago, you don't look old enough to be writing 50 years ago.
I started when I was, well, actually, I really started writing when I was 11 years old. I tell this story in the acknowledgement section. My father was a Navy man who retired, and then he was a construction worker, a fireman, and then he was the first male librarian in Davis County, Kentucky. And so I showed him a short story I wrote where the character blackmails the world into world peace by holding all the power of a nuclear bomb. And I showed him this story that I had written, and he pulled out his pencil, and on top of the page, he wrote out how that story would appear in a card catalog of the old card catalogs that they had at the library. And it was such a, I think he was just being playful. But for me, that was a mind-blowing experience of, oh my God, I could write something that could be part of that vast, vast rooms of endless shelves that had all these books on them, including the books that I checked out. So that just kind of really did push me to do a lot of writing, short stories, plays, failed novels, screenplays, the whole nine yards.
Well, I thought at first you were going to tell us your dad was part of the Village People until he got to being a librarian.
right. Yes, that's very true. Yeah, he had several different jobs, held several different jobs over the years.
Did you have a point or purpose to this book? Like, when you sat down and put together these stories, was there something you wanted the reader to take away from it?
Well, I wanted to take some things that I feel like in our current culture, it seems like there's certain tropes and certain ways that we are expected to write about subjects now. And for example, in one of the first stories of the collection is called Surviving. And it's about a men's group, therapy group of sexual abuse and incest survivors. And so in that story, what I wanted to do was show that there's not one type of trauma. There's not one type of victim. There's not one particular way or better way of surviving. And I wanted to get that broad range where people may actually crack a joke, where people may say, well, yes, this thing happened, I didn't like it, but I'm not as traumatized as you're expecting me to be. Or where there's also, of course, the people who have been crushed by it. And then those people who have suffered and yet also use it perhaps as a, I don't know, a get out of jail free card. So for bad behavior. So I wanted to really just capture a whole range of what people who have had that experience are like. And so again, it's just that things are a little bit more complex, a little bit more layered, a little bit more nuanced, and there's just not one way that you can write about such a character. And there's that idea, it goes through a lot of the stories.
Where did you come up with the ideas that you used in the story? Is there some live personal stuff involved, or is it just all fictional in your mind? Like, where do the stories come from?
Well, of course, there's 13 stories in the collection. So, again, that's also its own range. But even with stories that might begin with some kind of either autobiographical basis or maybe based on people that I know, eventually all the stories become fiction. It's very important to me that even if the character is based in something real or the situation is based in something real, that eventually it takes on its own life. It becomes in some way separate from me, and the characters, there's nothing better for a writer, I think, than when your characters say and do things in the moment that you're writing that you yourself didn't know they were going to say or do. That's the greatest part. And I really don't trust my stories until I have some place where that is happening. And that way, then I know it's not, it's certainly never totally going to be totally autobiographical. It's going to be these people in this situation. And then I guess I do have a kind of active imagination that creates things in my head, and I just kind of turn them over and turn them over and turn them over until I finally just have to sit down and finally write it out.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned tropes. Did you find any motifs that maybe kept reappearing in your stories as you wrote out these 13 different tales?
Well, I was very lucky that I found this title of Goes On Without the World's Understanding, because it's from a long Tennessee Williams passage in a short story called Oriflame, which he wrote back in the 1940s and then was included in the 1980 collected stories. And the thing that is, it's that things happen. There's all sorts of things happen in life and into people's life. It's that the idea that none of us really knows anyone's life, and that stuff goes on that the world just doesn't understand. And then the people who have these experiences, in some ways, they find their way to also go on, and the world doesn't understand that either. So I think it's that the mystery and complexities and the wonderful people really can never be pinned down. No matter how much you try, you can't pin down human experience and the human soul and the human spirit in all of its range. It can't be encapsulated in a simple way. So the idea that all of these things are happening in life, and like in some of my stories, there's sex trafficking and there's murder suicide, there's racial conflict, there's intergenerational conflict, there's love won, love lost. Again, it all goes on without the world's understanding.
Yeah, it's hard to be pinned down, but you can be tied up. now,
well, we tie ourselves in knots, that's for sure. We do that to ourselves all the time, don't we?
Yeah, all the time. It's more about what we think than, you know, it's all in our mind. Is there a particular story of the 13 that you're most proud of?
Well, I will tell you this. Two of the stories, Mr. Sissy in Sin City, which is about a retired teacher in his 60s who's at the roulette table late at night in Las Vegas, and he's joined by a very drunken young 21-year-old who's by himself. That seems to be a very big favorite of people, and it's also, I think, just very beautifully contained about these two very different people having this encounter. And then I also like The Barbies in the Closet, which is about a little boy who's at that age of 7 or 8 where you know what's reality and what's pretend, and yet your pretend, especially your fears, you can kind of still give yourself over to them. So I love that story. And then the story I was mentioning, Surviving, it is at the beginning of the book, and the last story of the book is called His Father. And that continues Surviving with the protagonist and his father spending a quiet Sunday evening, and the father was the one who sexually abused him. So those four stories, I think, each are very unique, and each really, again, it captures that wide range of what I was talking about, the variety of human experience and how people go through it.
Are you hoping to do more than just one of these style of books? Were you going to do some more, maybe?
Well, I am working on another book where it's a novella called That Goddamned Red Rose. And I don't want to really get into what that's going to be about, but there will also be three stories, short stories in that book, including one called Not a Very Nice Person. It's a story that we decided not to put into Goes On because it was more of a maybe a little bit nastier and meaner story and bitter story than I felt. Perhaps maybe wasn't quite as compassionate or as gentle as or as loving as the other stories were and goes on. So that'll get included. But yeah, that's the book that I'm currently working on.
Do you feel that you're a natural short story writer, or have you considered eventually expanding out to novels?
Well, I, you know what? I think I don't, I've tried novel writing and I haven't come up with an idea that is really sustainable for, say, 200, 250 pages even. I have written plays. I have written full-length plays. And again, and on my website, thomaswesterfieldwriter.com, I do have a PDF of my play Monasteries, which was written in the 1980s. It was produced at Southern Illinois University and won the second prize of the Julie Harris Beverly Hills Theater Guild Playwriting Award. And I did write in the 80s and 90s. I wrote several plays, full length and short one acts. But for I took a detour and I stopped writing for about, oh my goodness, probably 12 to 15 years where I wasn't writing anything. And getting back to writing with Mr. Sissy and Sin City, the short stories have flowed so much easier. And I think it's because I heard a great thing from the author, Erica Young. I don't know if you remember her from Fear of Flying, but she was giving a talk and she said the obvious thing, but it's the thing that really struck me in a fresh way, that your job as a writer is to keep the reader turning the page. And I think with short stories, they're so focused. You have to get to where you're going. And of course, you can have some lovely sentences, but it's really about just starting the story, telling the story, and letting this go to its natural end. And I think also, too, frankly, not readers. I think readers are a different breed of audience. But I do know that I think the audience nowadays I think that idea of steady, consistent focus on one thing seems to be eroding. So I think short stories actually are a really great form for a lot of new readers, especially.
Well, yeah, you would definitely think that people, readers themselves, would spend, more time reading short fiction just because of lowered attention spans and totally encapsulated. I'm curious, why was there a gap? Why did you walk away from writing for a period of time?
Well, I ended up, unfortunately, my plays never really took off. They would win second prize in contest. I did get produced, one play did get produced in Chicago, and that was, to be honest, it was just a crushing experience because the casting was changed without me knowing that it was going to be changed. And it was just a terrible production. And I felt so defeated because I thought, now this is my entryway, to be produced in a nice theater in Chicago. So that was kind of crushing. And then the other things that I was writing after that, just nobody was really responding to. And then it becomes that issue of survival. I mean, I need health insurance.
Right.
And when you go into a job, I was working for a lot of law firms as a legal billing coordinator. I ended up working at a couple of international law firms with a lot of corporate clients. And that kind of job just simply doesn't allow a lot left over. So at the end of the day, there wasn't really anything that I didn't even have the desire to give. And I also kind of gave up the dream of like, oh, I'm going to get published or somehow I'm going to find an audience. I just kind of let that die out.
I always found that you got to sleep your way to the top.
I would love to have tried that method. I probably might have gotten by with it when I was younger, but once you hit your 60s, it's a little harder to pull off.
Well, you just give them a picture of Dave and then you do it. It has to be really dark when you meet them. They don't know. Well, when you mentioned your characters earlier and how when you said when you started to hear them and they sort of see where they go and stuff like that. So maybe describe or explain what your let's say, personal experiences with your characters, your relationship?
Well, you know, it's funny. I always end up in some ways, in some situations, I sometimes end up wishing I was as good of a person as some of my characters are. And I sometimes I have a compassion for the ones that even if I think they're in some ways, but I don't think anybody's irredeemable, but I have had characters that I kind of pull away from or can't fully embrace. But even with them, I feel that just that sense of their humanity. And I really spend a lot of time just thinking in my head before I write, but I just want to, it's not really what they look like or even sound like, but it's almost like that, you know how you meet people, you just have a visceral sense of who they are or what they're about. And that's really what I try to focus on, is just whenever that idea for a story or that idea for a character comes through, is just what's my visceral sense about who is this person? Are they somebody I want to spend time with? Are they somebody I want to get to know? Are they a mystery I want to solve? Do they have a sense of humor? And so that usually comes fairly quick. And then the situation that I put them in, I just do so much. It's funny. It's almost like a pregnancy of sorts that I have like three or four story ideas that keep rolling around in my brain over and over again. And oftentimes, to tell you the truth, I'll even write the opening sentence, even the opening paragraph in my head before I actually sit down and actually put it out on paper.
So when you're doing the dialogue and you're putting it together, do you hear the voices of the characters?
I do. I have a sense of the volley of back and forth between people. And sometimes it's more vivid than others. It's interesting because it's so hard to explain. I'm sure you understand this as a writer yourself, but it is an alternate reality. I'm immersed in their world. And I love being surprised by what they're saying. So, it's very easy to hear them and to, once there's a rhythm going, especially in terms of conflict or in terms of that thing where, of course, we say things, but there's something underneath of what we're saying. When I'm in those situations with the character, it flows out real easy.
Does this happen a lot when you're driving?
I don't drive. I've never had a driver's license.
Well, thank God.
I have a driving phobia. I think it's because my mother she got her driver's license when she was pregnant with me. That's what I think happened. But I've never driven.
Well, that's good. You know, if you're hearing voices, you shouldn't be driving.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, and it is funny because sometimes I know that when I'm walking, I will, without realizing it, I am, the characters are dialoguing out loud, and I'm not aware of it until I look at other people. That's happened before. I'd like to go back to one thing, though, if I could, because you asked me about why I had stopped writing. I was working for this law firm as a billing coordinator, and it was incredibly, it wasn't until I left it that I realized how much I was actually working. But I got sick in the week between Christmas 2010 and New Year's Day 2011. With what I thought was a cold, and then I thought was the flu, and then as my lungs started shutting down, I realized it was pneumonia. I was put in a medically induced coma for about 10 days, and when I woke up, it was 2 weeks later from when I had walked into the emergency room. And I had a little bit, it did take a while, I had a little bit of cognitive I wouldn't say cognitive decline, but just cognitive difficulty with memory. And my job was so much about synthesizing information very quickly. So I actually took an early retirement on disability, and it took a couple of years I started writing when again I heard about the Saints and Sinners Festival in New Orleans, and they had a contest, and I just thought, you know, why not try it? Just why not try it? And they were the title was again Saints and Sinners, so I was trying to figure out what's the theme there. And at that time, I had a trip to Las Vegas planned, and so when I was in Vegas, that's where the whole idea for that story came back to me. And after that, I think of the 13 stories, I think seven of them were since that time in 2016 when I began writing with the contest for Saints and Sinners. That's what started me off, and being retired that really helps for the writing time.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Saints and Sinners. I've been asked to go. I never have.
Oh, you should definitely go. Definitely go.
Well, something about New Orleans that just sort of. Dave was dancing there a while back.
Yes,
4 years ago.
That's me now.
Yeah, it was really. It was really scary.
I had to entertain all of New Orleans.
Yeah, you did.
Somebody has to do it.
I certainly did. I saw you. still shaking. So do you like the live show sort of thing? Will you be doing more book shows and things like that now that you've got this book out?
Well, I do like reading. I in 2020, right, like literally the week before the pandemic lockdown started in San Francisco, I had a reading at a bookstore here of my story Surviving, and I do like reading. I'm a little bit of a performer. There was a course I took a long time ago in graduate school called Writing Has Performance, which I really like that title and that idea, because in a way writing is, or can be, not always, but it can be a form of performance, a way of acting. And so I love telling a story. And when it's my story, I love reading my story. And I get very, and I was very happy. The audience was very responsive. So I do like doing live readings.
Were you taking your clothes off too at the same time?
No, again, at 69 and let's see, 210 pounds. I think that might not have, I don't think that's what the audience came for.
Well, you said they were responsive, so I thought, well, maybe there's some action going on here. I don't
know. No, it was all my writing and all my reading of the writing that did it. So.
See, I'm not used to that, man. I'm wearing a bikini out there. So now, after doing all of this, you know, you completed the book, you got the stories out there, it's published, it's done, and all this stuff. And looking back before you did it, compared to now today, how do you think this process has changed you?
That is such an excellent, excellent question. And I think it has changed me in that I think I'm more clear in myself about what I want to be doing with the act three of my life, with what's important. And writing is certainly a essential part of that. But I'm also just aware of, I have an appreciation for my past. I have an appreciation for the people of my past, family, certainly, and a great, great history of friends. And that gratitude and that appreciation and that kind of just, I mean, I am so sorry to use a cliche on you all, but it is, there is a miracle about being alive. And I feel so alive when I'm creating. Yeah, I'd much rather be doing that the next, the final. I'm 69, so that means my chances of being dead in 20 years are superb. My next 20 years, I think my time will be both more used more wisely, and certainly with a lot more joy and appreciation.
Well, do you think writing has been therapeutic for your recovery for when it comes to your cognitive ability?
That's a good question too. I think it gives me because I have to focus. It's sometimes I will be honest. I have maybe two or three good hours where I can really do intense, you know, solid writing. Around the fourth hour, it gets a little mushy. So I need to, you know, take a break from it for at least, oh God, you know, a nap. Two or three hours of doing something else, and then I get a kind of new wind and a fresh mind again. So I definitely think it forces my mind to work. And someone told me it's interesting because I have a lot of trouble taking in information and synthesizing and understanding. But there's a whole different set of your brain gets used when you're putting out information, and especially with writing, which demands, at least on the keyboard, a kind of coordination. So that's actually been very good for my cognitive abilities, but I'm not sure it hasn't improved my ability to take in and understand lots of information at one time. I still get kind of overwhelmed with that. But in terms of giving me my brain a little bit more clarity, focus, energy, yes, writing definitely has been a great thing. The other thing is, I'm going to just throw this in too. I don't know if you noted this in my biography, but I'm also, I mean, even though I'm writing about all these things, murder, suicide, sexual abuse, conflict and everything, I'm actually a certified laughter yoga leader, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with laughter yoga, but it's a form of exercise that uses laughter, has your kind of breath work. That certainly was a big help for me cognitively, especially in the getting out of the coma and the drugs I was on. And just, yeah, laughter is a good thing. Laughter for no other reason than just for the sake of laughing is something I very, very much believe in.
Sounds like these stories, each one of them is kind of has a very important meaning to you. Is there a subtext to each one of them? Like, is there something you want it to say?
I think it's just, I want people to, something to resonate with people in their own lives and with the people in their own lives and their experiences, to where maybe they look at it from a different perspective, a different way of seeing that they haven't seen before. Something that just kind of, that maybe, yes, there's tragedy and there's suffering. I never deny tragedy and suffering. And there's still something within the tragedy and suffering that just because it is human and just because it's life itself, it should be, I'm not sure if embrace is the word, but can be accepted, can be made peace with. I think that's just really, yeah, that's very important to me. I also, one of the stories is called The Boy in the Audience, and it takes place in 1971 Kentucky, where a closeted gay teenager goes to see the movie The Boys in the Band, the original 1970 film. It's funny because for so many years, you know, a lot of gay activists consider, you know, The Boys in the Band as, you know, retrograde and negative and full of self-hate and, you know, the wrong story or the wrong image for gay people. But I got into that. For me, the idea for someone in Kentucky being introduced to gay life through a movie, which so much of us, not just gay life, but just so much of life, were introduced through movies and books. But for this character, what he's not responding to the self-hate of the characters. He's responding to the fact that they're affectionate, that they dance, that they laugh with each other, that they get drunk with each other and have these big dramatic scenes, which seems very exciting, you know, to do that in a New York apartment that has a, you know, outside patio overlooking the city. So it's the idea that some of these things which we're told are wrong or bad or aren't good for us, or that we're supposed to have a specific response to. I like writing those things that are about, that kind of go against that grain. And I hope that in some ways, like I said, the reader gets to reflect for themselves about some of their own experiences that are similar, and that they maybe have a little bit of a different appreciation or perspective about their experiences.
Yeah, I guess it probably surprises you on how backwards sort of the country is going toward some of the LGBTQ thoughts, you know, and stuff like that. Perhaps something like this will be a good influence.
Well, I, to be honest, I personally, for myself, just speaking for myself, I hate fiction that tries to make me a better person. I don't mind fiction that tries to make me a different person. And it's always a great side benefit if it makes me a better person. But it's not about learning lessons as much as it's about discovering oneself and knowing and maybe expanding your heart a little bit towards others. That would be a great thing. I think what's going on in the culture right now, it's that whole thing, where we take two steps forwards and at least one, if not two or three steps back. So it's very hard to figure out exactly what's going on. I know for myself, I don't know if you have this experience when you talk to young people in their 20s, sometimes I'm just absolutely in awe of them. I'm just amazed at how much smarter and insightful and purposeful and committed they are, or at least some of them are. And then sometimes I see and talk to 20 year olds, and I recognize how I was at 20 years old. And then other times it's like, oh my God, you people are just like really too precious or too hung up on the wrong thing. So it's such a bizarre culture right now, I think. It's hard to say where we're going. And I have hope generally. But I think we are all the struggles. It's interesting to see these struggles are coming back and these conflicts are coming back. I don't think my stories offer us a way out, except maybe, again, opening our hearts a little bit more to the complexity of each human. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm talking in cliches right now, so I apologize.
Oh, it's all right. Now let's talk about where people can find Thomas. Like, you hanging out in bars? Do you have social media, Facebook? Do you have a website, hookup apps? Where do they find Thomas?
Well, you can find my website, thomaswesterfieldwriter.com. I actually do not use social media. I think, for example, like with Twitter, I think the idea of me having something which allows me to broadcast to the world the very first thought that comes to my mind, I think would be just a total disaster. So I totally avoid Twitter. And I think social media, it is a very useful tool in especially in terms of promotion and publicity. And I'm certainly hypocritical enough to exploit my friends who use and have social media. But for myself, I see sometimes social media as kind of it can be a black hole. And again, as I reach a certain age, I'd rather spend my time reading, writing, being with friends and family, rather than doing Instagram likes or, like I said, broadcasting my opinion on every little thing. But you can go to my website, thomaswesterfield.com. That tells you my book. It has my play Monasteries. It gives you a little bit of a biography. And it does have an email address if you would like to contact me for, I don't know, anything. You want to give me comments about the books. I had a teacher once who, when he would end his lessons, he would ask, say, comments, questions, or snide remarks. So I don't want the snide remarks, but if you have comments or questions, I'd love to hear from readers. And also, too, if people, I'm trying to start developing a little bit of a side thing where people, after I've gone through this process of writing and learning so much about publishing, especially some of the smaller publishing houses, and I did a big research. I want to say how grateful I am to Rattling Good Yarns Press, because I was rejected from 12 to 16 other small presses, but they took on the book within 1 month. I mean, I sent it to them, they read it, and within a month they signed up and they were willing to take it on. So I'm very grateful for them. But anyway, if someone is interested in writing a book or kind of negotiate or navigate the waters of getting published, I'm certainly glad to help assist them for price, of course, but I'm very be helpful in that way.
Well, so we'll have all that up on our website. People can find you with one click. It'll be real easy. So what's next? Where's Thomas going now?
Well, Actually, I have a cousin from Kentucky who's in Oakland waiting for me to come visit him. But beyond that, it's the book. I think the book. And then also, too, I'm very happy. I'm going to go to Rome in the October. I've never been to Italy. And so that's going to be great. And I'm also doing a lot of outreach, especially during the month of June. But one thing with a small press, Rattling Good Yarns does do some promotion, but a lot of it is just me doing footwork and one-on-one contact, trying to get readings at bookstores in the Bay Area, trying to get interviews from different presses and reaching out. Like I said, even though I don't use social media, I'm glad to exploit those who do. So I'm making a lot of one-on-one contacts to friends and family and people large, far and wide. So that's really my big project for the next month.
Well, fantastic. Our guest has been Thomas Westerfeld, and his book that's just come out is called Goes On Without the World's Understanding. So thank you for being here.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoy this a lot more. As I told you earlier in the pre-interview, I've never done a radio interview before, especially at this length. So I do feel like I lost my virginity, but it was a very pleasurable experience. So thank you very much.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.